This is the RightsCast Network at rightscast.net. This is episode 16 of Novel Approaches here on the RightsCast Network. Welcome to the RightsCast Network's Novel Approaches podcast, a craft-focused conversation for writers everywhere. Because writing novels is hard, and we're all in this together. Hey there, I'm author, editor, and RightsCast Network founder R.R. Campbell. My regular co-host Sione is unable to join us this time around, but rest assured she'll be back in action for next month's installment of the show. In this episode of Novel Approaches, however, we'll still be exploring fatal flaws, what they are, how they differ from regular old flaws, and whether fatal flaws can ever be assets. First, though, it's July and summer is officially here for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere. I hope your summer is off to a great start, or if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, I hope you're keeping warm. I know I just got back from a road trip to Montana, so I am feeling rested and ready to go as the summer gets started in earnest here. I'm starting with Camp NaNoWriMo this July, which, if you're not familiar, Camp NaNoWriMo is basically an extension of National Novel Writing Month, but Camp NaNoWriMo happens in, I think they do it in April, and they also do it here in July. I'm starting with a project that I've been really antsy to get going with for some time here, but I finally felt like I had a solid enough outline and a good understanding of character, or as good of an understanding as one can have before doing any actual writing. And I'm finally writing this fun, at least I think it's fun anyway, old Western, but with dinosaurs. Just replace all your beasts of burden that you're familiar with dinosaurs, and that's basically the world that I'm going to be rolling with here for the start of this new series, so that's been really exciting. If you're doing Camp NaNoWriMo, or you just want to give us a heads up on what you're working on in general, go ahead and let us know. Reach out to us at rightscast.net/contact, or you can email us at rightscast@gmail.com, or even tweet at us at RightsCast over on Twitter. It'd be great to hear from you, get to know you, get to know our listeners a little bit more, and, you know, we can incorporate what it is you're working on maybe in a future episode of our show. So again, that's rightscast@gmail.com. Whether you're participating in Camp NaNoWriMo or just feel like you've got something you want to throw out there into the universe based on what we're covering here in this conversation or what we might be covering in future episodes of the show, go ahead and let us know by email, on Twitter, or through our website. Aside from all of that, a couple other quick notes for those of you who are interested in learning a bit more. I've got some seminars and conferences coming up. You can find me July 27th in Waukesha, Wisconsin at the All Writers Workshop. I will be doing a 5-hour extended super session on how to further develop our concepts, how we can map them out over various plot structure models, and then we will go ahead and start working on a scene-by-scene outline, basically walking you through what my entire pre-write process is from start to finish. If that's something you're interested in, you can head to rrcampbellwrites.com/events and learn more there, or just do a Google search for All Writers Workshop in Wisconsin. You'll be able to find my class listing under their Celebrity Saturday page. So again, that seminar is July 27th in Waukesha, Wisconsin. If you're in the area and can make it, I would love to see you there. Aside from that, I will be hanging out at MightyCon, both in Madison and Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That'll be on August 4th and September 7th in Madison and Milwaukee, respectively. I'll be there hanging out, ready to talk about science fiction, ready to talk about the Empathy series, ready to chat with you about whatever it is you'd like to chat about. And I'll have books available as well, of course, those being Imminent Dawn and Morning Dove, the first two installments in the Empathy sci-fi saga. So if you'd like to learn more about that, if you want to learn more about tickets for getting into MightyCon, there's going to be a lot of really great artists, authors, and other vendors at that conference as well. You can head to rrcampbellwrites.com/events. That's rrcampbellwrites.com/events. But hey, you know what? I know why you're here. You're not here to listen to me blather on about upcoming seminars, etc., though I very much hope you attend those or come say hello at a conference. You're here for our conversation about fatal flaws. And as usual, Sione and I took to Twitter in the days prior to this recording, and we asked for your opinion, your thoughts, your commentary on fatal flaws in our monthly hashtag RightsCast chat over on Twitter. part of this was asking you, what are fatal flaws? Why do we think fatal flaws are important? Does a fatal flaw actually have to be fatal, etc.? If you joined us for that chat, thank you so much for making it out. We always appreciate your participation. And as usual, what we'll be doing here today in this episode is walking through some of what it is you had to say about fatal flaws, and then I'll throw in my own two cents, and we'll see if we can paint a picture to bring some clarity to what fatal flaws are and how we can go about making sure that we are writing them effectively. So with that in mind, I want to start, of course, with this question: what are fatal flaws? We had some participation from one person over on Twitter. This is Whitney. Whitney is on Twitter as write_wherever. And Whitney had this to say: a fatal flaw is something that always trips the character up. It's their exploitable weakness. My main character's fatal flaw is wanting independence at any cost. It makes her go it alone when a team would be better, or buy into plans that aren't in her best interest in the end. So thanks, Whitney. Appreciate that feedback. We'll slide right into some more feedback to what fatal flaws are from CL Polk. C over on Twitter tweets as CL Polk. And C had this to say: the fatal flaw is the character trait that leads a character to ruin in tragic stories because they are unable to overcome it. And thinking about my latest works, my protagonists don't seem to have one. So C going out there giving us a definition of a fatal flaw and reflecting then to herself that her protagonists don't seem to have a fatal flaw. And I kind of wonder about that in my own work. I've often found myself questioning after I write, you know, hey, what is my character's fatal flaw? You know, for all of the planning that I might do in advance of writing a story, I might only know what that fatal flaw is once I get to the end of a process. And for me anyway, I think that it's important that our characters do have fatal flaws when all is said and done. It basically, in my view, those fatal flaws really create situations where our characters are forced to overcome not only that external conflict that we see thrust upon them, but also this deep internal conflict. It's something about themselves that they either need to overcome to actually achieve some sort of success or victory, whether that's full-blown success or, you know, just a small marginal amount of what they thought they could achieve. I think that creates really compelling storytelling when we have a character who is really having to do some great introspection, not necessarily navel-gazing, but introspection about themselves. And that introspection is thrust upon them because they have been out in the world, they have been trying to take on these great challenges, these challenges that are bigger than themselves, but they're ultimately finding that they're tripping themselves up sometimes along the way, and they need to overcome that tripping of themselves up, I should say, that tripping must be overcome so that they are in a position to come out on the far side successful and hopefully as a better person too. Well, we're not done figuring out what fatal flaws are here. We had feedback as well from Cinna. Cinna is a longtime RightsCast chat participant. I was really glad to see that he could join us for this chat as well. Cinna defined fatal flaws in this way: a fatal flaw is one that's definitely going to trip them up. It's going to send them down the dark road to the nadir of their character arc, and it's going to be responsible for that. And then in a later tweet, Cinna added this: the fatal flaw is central to the character's ideology or worldview, and it's going to be their downfall if they don't recognize that and course correct. And I should mention this because I didn't mention it at the top of his tweets here. Cinna tweets at CINNAEDHVIK. So thank you, Cinna, for that feedback. One thing that I really like about what Cinna had to say here is that the fatal flaw is in some way central to the character's ideology or worldview. It's a really big part of them at this deep, fundamental level. And in some ways, I think we might see that the fatal flaw ties into backstory. It's possibly a learned behavior. We have to ask ourselves, we had this example earlier, I believe that was from Whitney, talking about this character who wants independence at any cost. Well, if we know that that's a character's fatal flaw, maybe it's worth asking ourselves how that became their fatal flaw. And that can give us some insight into a character's backstory that we didn't know about previously. It might open us up to a whole new world of opportunities if we're willing to just follow this rope, so to speak. Or maybe we'll use the, let's go with the metaphor machine of the classic Hansel and Gretel, they're leaving breadcrumbs in the forest. We're going to follow that breadcrumb trail, and we're going to know that, okay, here's what our fatal flaw is. Let's follow that trail back into our character's past and understand more about their motivations, who they are as a person, and what led them to this position. And that, of course, is another way that we can empower ourselves to be looking at fatal flaws through a lens that will help us write the best characters, the most convincing characters, and the most compelling characters that we possibly can. And there was one other person, or at least one other person, that was contributing to the RightsCast chat when we had it for this episode, and that was me. I actually did jump in this time rather than just moderate from the RightsCast Network account. I tweet over on Twitter as I am RR Campbell. And this was what I kind of threw out into the conversation for what a fatal flaw is, and that is namely a character trait that generally drives how a character chooses to address their challenges. It's their all reliable, if you will. But the problem here is that this all reliable, if they never deviate from it, often gets that character into big trouble. Now, I do have some examples of that, and I'll use them from my own work, of course. It's what I'm going to be most familiar with in terms of being in a character's head and having had to write out a fatal flaw and develop a nice understanding of it. And the fatal flaw that I threw onto Robin, who is the main character in Accounting for It All, that's the novel about the adult film star turned accountant who finds herself mired in an IRS audit of a money laundering scheme she had no idea she was part of. In Accounting for It All, Robin, she just has this failure to be honest. She's willing to take the easy way out all the time. And this sets her up for some really nice, I guess if we want to call it that, success. When we enter the ordinary world of the story, Robin is feeling very easy peasy lemon squeezy about this job that she has. She's a quote unquote accountant. Her supervisor has always just kind of said, yeah, you know, you do you, don't worry about it, I'll take care of all the work. But when her supervisor is suddenly indisposed, shall we say, and she finds herself confronting this IRS audit, well, now she's been at this company for years, and she's the only person who can push back against this IRS audit, and she doesn't know anything about her job. So, of course, she goes back to this old reliable, this fatal flaw of, well, I'll just kind of fudge the truth, and I'll find crafty little ways to get around this situation, and I won't be totally forthcoming. And she achieves some modest amounts of success, but over time, she gets pit up against these more difficult challenges, and we see that eventually, if Robin's ever going to be whole, if she's ever going to become the most, if she's going to become the best version of herself she possibly can, she's going to need to be honest, not only with the rest of the world, but with herself. And so in that way, we see this fatal flaw posing a deeply rooted obstacle to our main character, and she has to overcome it by the end of the novel. Otherwise, well, let's be honest, she's going to wind up in jail, or possibly worse, who knows what happens over the course of that book. I do, as do readers of the book, so if that sounds interesting to you, you know where to find it. But then beyond Accounting for It All, I'll use one more example from my Empathy sci-fi saga, and that is with Imminent Dawn, and I suppose all of the books in the series as they come out. But that is Chandra. She is our art school dropout who enrolls in the first round of human trials for this internet access brain implant, because she wants to use it. She's really hoping that she can use this implant to connect with her wife, who's in a coma. She wants to apologize for the role that she believes she played in this coma. And Chandra's fatal flaw is that she's always putting others before herself. Now, that might seem like an interesting fatal flaw, or at least it might not quite feel like a flaw at first glance, because you're like, oh, well, that's wonderful. We're really happy when we have people who are willing to go the extra mile for other people, who are willing to not take selfish actions all of the time. But where it becomes a fatal flaw for Chandra is that her willingness to be so selfless ultimately comes at a great cost to her, and as a result of it having a cost for her, it ends up having a cost for others as well. So if only she were to have taken a couple of different paths along the way, if she had said, you know what, I need to put my foot down and do something for myself, she might not have ended up in as dark of a situation as we find her and many of the other patients ending up in by the time that book is done. So I hope I didn't give away too many spoilers there, but it's just an example again of how a fatal flaw, even something that might seem like an asset, it's this desire to be selfless, that can come back to bite you. It can come back to bite any character, and it's an example of what a fatal flaw is and how it can be employed. With that, let's pause for a moment for a brief word from, well, me. Your book, Our Airwaves, yes, it's true, anything is possible when you advertise with the RightsCast Network. Hey there, I'm R.R. Campbell, RightsCast Network founder, and I'm here to let you know that you can now advertise your book, podcast, editing services, whatever creative endeavor, you can advertise it here on the RightsCast Network. Not only that, but you can advertise with us for less than a dollar a month, yes. We offer packages for as little as less than a dollar a month. So get your book, your editing services podcast, what have you, introduced to hundreds of new listeners by advertising with us today at rightscast.net/advertise or email me at rightscast@gmail.com and we can get started. Let's make it happen for you and your creative endeavors. That's your book, our airwaves, rightscast.net/advertise. So with that in mind, I kind of want to transition now into the next major section that we're going to be covering in this conversation, and that is, we have these fatal flaws, but what about regular flaws? What is the difference if there is one, and what does that really mean for us as storytellers? What does it mean for our characters? I'll turn over to the RightsCast chat here again. This is a tweet from me, but I'm citing a tweet from C.L. Polk. Again, C tweets at C.L. Polk. Here I am referencing something that she mentioned earlier in the conversation. I really felt that she got to the heart of the difference between fatal flaws and regular flaws by stating that the fatal flaw is the one that leads a character down the road to ruin. The flaw essentially leads to a death of some kind, or at least a flirtation with death. So, for example, you could have a character who is flawed in some regard in that, oh, perhaps they're just not a very good listener, right? You could have a character who just isn't great at actually paying attention to the people around them. That's a flaw, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's a fatal flaw unless their inability to pay attention and listen to other people is ultimately what leads them down the road to ruin. That inability to pay attention could be used, for example, for comic relief at times when they're in a group of people and they're all having a quick chat. They might miss a few details here or there that cause them to behave in a way that isn't exactly in line with what everyone was expecting. And we all go, oh, haha, there you are again. Please pay attention. We'd really appreciate it if you were a little more invested in what was going on here. Not necessarily a fatal flaw. If, however, over the course of the story, their inability to remain invested in what's happening in the room immediately in front of them, if they're always perhaps dreaming about the future, or perhaps they're distracted by literally any old thing, if that keeps tripping them up and puts them into some sort of existential crisis, I would argue then that we've taken what was, or maybe could have been, a regular old flaw, and we've now made it a fatal flaw. It is a serious impediment to their ability to be successful. So we can have things that, hey, it's a regular old flaw, but we could turn it into a fatal flaw. The important distinction here for me anyway, is that for a flaw to truly be fatal, for it to be the fatal flaw, it must pose some sort of existential threat to our character. And that's something that we'll actually jump into a little bit more here with a quote, a tweet, I should say, from Cinna. Cinna actually points out in this tweet that fatal flaws don't have to be literally fatal. And here is the tweet that we have from Cinna. I don't think characters have to die. And this is me adding this in here, he doesn't think characters have to die for a flaw to be a fatal flaw. Cinna adds, a death of culture or morality or value system suffices, or the death of trust. A bridge crossed and then burned is fatal in some ways. Like they say, there are fates worse than death. And we also have Whitney, who has added in another tweet here, kind of on the same topic. Whitney adds, physical death? No. But something has to die before the fatal flaw can be overcome. A belief or moral, an emotion, a way of thinking, a relationship. A breaking of mind, heart, or spirit that fundamentally changes the character can be as strong or heartbreaking as death itself. And what I really like about what both Cinna and Whitney are pointing out here is that we do seem to have some consensus. Not every character needs to die to the literal meaning of the word. Their heart does not need to stop as a result of their fatal flaw for us to consider it a fatal flaw. We can have this relationship between, rather than life itself, but the dark night of the soul, which is something that Sion's talked about a great deal in previous episodes of this show. And one example that is fresh in my mind about a fatal flaw that really has consequences for a character that aren't about that character actually dying comes from Elf, the movie with Will Ferrell, of all places. This is fresh in my mind because I'm actually reading Blake Snyder's Save the Cat, finally. It's a book that is primarily directed toward writing screenplays, but I do think it has a lot of, so far anyway, I haven't quite finished the book yet, but it does have a lot of really valuable information for writers of novels or storytellers in general. Definitely one that I encourage you to check out as part of your diet of consuming media that will help you in your writing journey. But in Blake Snyder's Save the Cat, he references this scene from Elf that is during the character's Dark Night of the Soul moment. And in this moment, Will Ferrell's character is looking out over a bridge as if he's going to jump. So we have this sort of flirtation with death to some extent, but as anyone who has watched the movie knows, Will Ferrell does not jump off the bridge. He does not actually die in this moment, or his character, of course, doesn't anyway. But what we're actually getting here is this, again, it's a flirtation with death, and it's not just death, it's the death of his belief in the power of Christmas spirit. So throughout the movie, of course, we have Will Ferrell's character. He is driven very much by loving Christmas. That's what he's all about. He doesn't understand people that can't be into Christmas. And as he's going about his journey, he is able to bring much joy to many people as a result of what we're going to call a fatal flaw here. But at the same time, it ultimately trips him up because it's constantly creating friction with people who are maybe more disillusioned with the holiday season than he is, with people who are just not quite as energetic as he is. And all of this consternation, all of the conflict between his unrelenting belief in the power of Christmas ultimately pushes him to a moment where he all might be lost. He doesn't know if he's able to believe in the power of Christmas any longer, or at least if my memory of the movie serves. But the point is, we have this moment where a character's fatal flaw is in many, sometimes an asset, but it doesn't mean that they need to actually die, physically die, for it to be a fatal flaw. We have this death of spirit. We have this possible death of a particular belief or moral code, whatever the case might be. We can still look at that, in my view, and say that that is a fatal flaw. And I've touched on this a little bit throughout this conversation, whether it is through referencing the Empathy series or with Elf just now in looking at Will Ferrell's character, but I want to explore this idea a little bit more, with that being, namely, whether fatal flaws can actually be assets for our characters. You know, must they always be a flaw that is impeding our character's ability to get things done in the real world? We, of course, asked this to the community at large during our RightsCast chat, and C.L. Polk had another great tweet here. With respect to whether fatal flaws can be assets for our characters, C. says this. That's how they start. The flaw in a character's personality is the result of a misconception about the world that they hold close to them. It protects them from being hurt in the same way as the initial event that instilled the belief underlying the flaw. And I really like that because this is actually tying right back into something we were discussing earlier in this very episode, namely, that this fatal flaw is inspired by an initial event that, in C's words, quote, instilled the belief underlying the flaw. So we're getting this really great connectivity now between, well, what we're seeing is that this character has what is a fatal flaw, but it's been working for them for a while. And so when our story opens with our character in the ordinary world, they're in this position where, wow, hey, it's my, as I mentioned earlier, old reliable. I've been able to use this tool or this belief or this action to get me out of so many situations. I have an unwavering faith in its ability to get things done, and I'm just going to go ahead and stick with it. But where our story really begins is suddenly this coping mechanism, this trait, whatever we want to call it, it's no longer producing the results that it once did, and in fact, it might actually be harming and eventually does harm our character or perhaps characters around them. And whether fatal flaws can be assets or not, Cinna actually had something to throw in on this one as well. Cinna said, quote, oh yeah, that's how it always is. The character thinks they've got this great talent for something, but it turns out they're blind to some of its effects. So for example, we've been talking about this a lot with respect to, well, a character has this fatal flaw, it comes back to bite them in the butt, but maybe what happens over the course of a story is it's not necessarily just about a character realizing that their actions or beliefs or the things that they say are having an effect on them personally, but they're seeing maybe some of the secondary and tertiary effects. They have an opportunity to see what happens to the people around them or the people that are even one more degree of separation removed from them that can ultimately lead them on a journey to force them to confront this fatal flaw. And that's part of character growth to some extent as well. When you have characters perhaps who have a very insular worldview, this could perhaps be their fatal flaw, is that they are thinking constantly about only maybe just what's right in front of them. Maybe it's only just themselves. Maybe they're only able to focus on what's happening on a given day of the calendar, what have you. But over the course of the book, they realize, well, this is having an effect on people who depend on me for X, Y, or Z, whatever the case might be. And they have to learn to address that so that this fatal flaw doesn't ultimately hurt their relationships with other people or perhaps be fatal in some way for other characters around them. Just a thought, thinking about that one right now, but I'm really glad that Cinna pointed it out because had he not, we wouldn't be able to have this angle of the conversation. So thanks again, Cinna, for throwing that out there. I'll fall back here now on two examples of how fatal flaws can be assets. I addressed them briefly at the top of this conversation, but again, we turn to Robin from Accounting for It All. Being dishonest and generally taking the easy way out, this set her up for great success. She was obviously having a great time working as this quote-unquote accountant, and life was pretty good for her, so she was able to let others do this work and bail her out. This was a great asset for her. She was able to show up for work 5 days a week. She really had to do work on one actual day of the week, and it wasn't accounting related. Who's going to complain about that? The paychecks keep coming. Wonderful for her. But as we know, it becomes a big issue for her down the road. And again, going back to Chandra in Imminent Dawn in the Empathy series, Chandra's selflessness is what leads her to being in a position to help her wife in the first place. If Chandra weren't so selfless, she wouldn't have been able to get the hope that the empathy study presents to her at first glance or in the initial pages of the book. She would never have perhaps even met Kira or gotten married to Kira in the first place. If I were to get into Kira's head, which of course I have had to do, she might really appreciate that selflessness in Chandra. She might have been very attached to that, and that could have been one of the things that motivated the two of them getting together. So again, that selflessness, though a fatal flaw, is an asset for Chandra in that regard. Though, all of that said, it's an asset, of course, but it does lead her down this deep, dark road that is not only book one of the series, but every book thereafter. Best of luck out there, Chandra. I'll be rooting for you. I'll also be writing you, so I totally understand if you want to be upset with me for how things go for a while. Anyway, let's hop into a slightly different aspect of this conversation now, and namely whether every character needs a fatal flaw. Cinna had this to say. We're asking, of course, not just whether every character needs a fatal flaw, but if not every character needs one, which characters do need a fatal flaw? Cinna said this. The first question is easy. No. Not every character needs a fatal flaw. The second question is difficult. I think if you're going to test a character and put them on the path to redemption or downfall, they need that fatal flaw to carry them to that lowest point. And I would tend to agree here. You know, I don't think we necessarily need it to be the case that every character, we're talking from, you know, our secondary cast all the way down to the bartender serving drinks at the favorite drinking hole for our character. I don't know if Ted, our bartender pal, needs to have a fatal flaw that we watch play out over the course of the manuscript. He's just kind of in the background. He's a character that you throw in there who's got a nice personality, but we're not really there for Ted's experience. We're not there for his story, at least if we've got this very compelling main character we're following throughout. So Ted, you probably don't need a fatal flaw. But I do think it's really important, and I mentioned this earlier, for our main characters to have a fatal flaw. Just like Cinna says, and I'll read it again. If you're going to test a character and put them on the path to redemption or downfall, they need that fatal flaw to carry them to their lowest point. And I could not agree more. So thanks again to Cinna for that prompt. We're actually going to slide now into listener questions. Believe it or not, when it's just me talking here into the microphone, we get about a half hour of content. The other half hour, of course, comes from Sion, who, like I mentioned, will be back with us for the next episode. But we have this for a listener question today, this one coming from Cinna. Thanks again. Cinna had this to ask of us, what's the best example of a fatal flaw that you've read? Now, I will be the first to admit, and perhaps you've heard me say this in other episodes of RightsCast Network programming, I am very bad when it comes to choosing a superlative anything. I swear to you, I don't have a favorite food, I don't have a favorite book, I don't have a favorite author. it just shifts all the time, right? So what is our best example of a fatal flaw? Well, I don't know if I'm going to make the argument that this is the best example of a fatal flaw, though I do think this is one that many of you listeners might be familiar with, or it's at least something you have some tangential knowledge of that we're able to kind of fill in the gaps to see how this is an effective fatal flaw. Think about, for example, Harry Potter. I know, read another book, I get it. But again, I want this to be something that is accessible to as many people as possible, so roll with me here when I use Harry Potter as an example. Harry Potter has this penchant for breaking the rules, right? He is just going to go ahead and use that Marauder's map to get around Hogwarts, name literally anything. In every book, he's in this constant state of breaking or bending the rules. And in many ways, this is, as we've discussed over the course of the conversation, it's an asset for him in many regards because it empowers him, Hermione, and Ron to be in positions to address their biggest challenges. But, though a fatal flaw, as we know can be the case for many characters, it's that case for Harry too, it's an asset, but it also always, always, always gets Harry into some sort of trouble. And not only that, but this fatal flaw, this penchant for breaking the rules, doesn't hurt just him, it hurts others too, including the people closest to him. And it's going to force not just Harry to take action to overcome this flaw, but it's going to force people like Ron and Hermione to go out of their way to save Harry's butt too. So there you have it. An example of a fatal flaw that I think has some broad appeal. There's a reason that so many folks were driven to reading that series in the first place. Who doesn't like a little bit of mischief? And Harry is nothing if not mischievous. So there's an example for you, Cinna. Like I said, maybe not the best example, but I do think it's one that permits us to touch on all the main beats of this conversation so far. With all of that said, I think it's time to wrap up this episode. I do want to mention that, as always, we will have opportunities for further engagement. You can help us pick the next topic for the Novel Approaches podcast. I'll be putting a poll up on Twitter after this episode debuts. That poll will be up for a week. Head on over there and you can vote for which topic you would like us to cover in our next episode. The topics that we'll have on the poll for next time around are going to be 1. The role of exposition, 2. Third option storytelling, 3. How to write satisfying endings, and then we will also have a 4th option that will be other. Feel free to select that and leave something in the comments if there is something, if a topic you would like to see us or hear us discuss in a future episode of the show. We'll add it to our possible list of topics. It'll go in the pool of subjects available for us to cover and we'll work it into a future poll. But again, the topics that you'll be able to choose from for our next episode are the role of exposition, third option storytelling, and how to write satisfying endings. And third option storytelling, for those of you who may not have turned into past episodes and heard me describe it as it's been part of our polls for a while now, third option storytelling is about pushing past the first idea that comes to mind, and it's also about putting our characters in positions to perhaps, when they're given option A and option B, and all they see is these two ways forward, well, they find that third way. They find an option C that kind of turns the story on its head. It turns that premise and that choice on its head in a way that creates a really clever way for us to advance our story. So, role of exposition, third option storytelling, and how to write satisfying endings. So head on over to Twitter. You can find the WritesCast Twitter handle at WritesCast. Check it out there. You can vote as soon as this episode goes live. You'll be able to vote for a week. And then, yeah, we will cover that topic in our next episode. And it'll also be the conversation that we have for the next WritesCast chat. So thank you, as always, for joining me for this episode of Novel Approaches here on the WritesCast Network. For more writerly content like this, you can visit WritesCast.net or follow us on Twitter at WritesCast, again there. Sion is over on Twitter as Write Learn Dream. She's, of course, always looking to connect with other readers and writers and hear what you're working on, so please do feel free to reach out to her. If you'd like to get in touch with me, I'm on Twitter as IamRRCampbell. I want to make sure that I thank the patrons of the WritesCast Network as well. Those are folks who contribute at patreon.com/rightscast, and they get some really great perks in exchange for their financial support of our programming. And those perks include things like Rightscast Network swag, discounts on my editing services. If you contribute at the $2 or $3 per episode level, you'll also get free critiques of the first 5 or 10 pages, respectively, of your work. You get votes in the Rightscast Awards, and I know this is Sion's favorite because she tells me all the time, you get exclusive, early, ad-free access to every episode of Novel Approaches and all of the programs on the Rightscast Network, and you get a fun little email sent right to your inbox every time a new episode goes live just for you without ads. So if you want to get in on some of those really great perks, you can contribute at $1, $2, or $3 per episode or per month. Everything helps, and we're really close. We remain very close to unlocking a 4th podcast every month. So if we can get 1 or 2 more people to contribute, even at $1 per month or per episode, we can get a 4th podcast every month. That'll be an extra half hour to an hour of programming every month for you to help you along your writing career. So please, if that's interesting to you, head on over to patreon.com/rightscast and make your pledge today. I want to make sure that we thank Laura Hazen and Kristen Oakley, who support Rightscast Network programming at that $3 per episode level. So thank you very much to the both of them for all of their contributions and for believing in our programming. So thank you very much, Laura and Kristen. And before we part ways here, I want to make sure you know what it is we will be covering next on the Rightscast Network. We will have an episode featuring Sylvia Acevedo, who will join me to talk about writing a series. This is actually a topic that was covered in a Novel Approaches podcast a few episodes back, but Sylvia will be joining me on the R.R. Campbell Rightscast to talk about it more exclusively from the perspective of a writer, what her experience has been in writing her own series. And Sylvia's great. I've had a chance to meet her personally, so I do hope that you will tune in for her episode when that one debuts. That's it for this episode of Novel Approaches. Thanks, as always, for listening. Until next time, you know what to do. Write on and write well. This is the Rightscast Network at rightscast.net.